Another Open, Another Show, a musical theatre podcast brought to you on Kaurna Land, Gawler, South Australia. I'm Jane and this is my co-host,
Michael. Hello listeners, wherever you are in this wonderful world of ours.
Today, what are we talking about, Michael?
Well, we're talking about Priscilla the musical.
Yes, it is officially known as Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, but it is not The Adventures Thereof, because that is too many words to put on a marquee in Broadway.
Yes, can you imagine that?
Oh, well, there have been the other musicals of much longer titles. Oh, Dad, Poor Dad, Mama Locked You in the Closet and I'm Feeling So Sad. In the 60s.
Well, this is our first Australian musical, isn't it?
It is. I'm very excited that we're finally, not finally, this is only episode 6, talking about an Australian homegrown musical. Now, this one, though, is not completely homegrown because it is what they call a jukebox musical. That means that songs from the pop world have been interpolated into the script. The putting together of a show when you're using existing work involves a lot of negotiation with all the various copyright holders. Now, listeners, if you've been listening to us from the very beginning, you know how much we respect international copyright law. We do not have a license to put extracts of the songs into this podcast. Therefore, we have created a Spotify playlist that accompanies each one of our episodes.
Oh, and a lot of people that I'm talking to really love the Spotify playlist.
Oh, that's great. Michael's other string to his bow, one of many strings actually, is that he is a busker or street performer, as non-Australian and English people might call it.
Yes, I perform here in Gawler and I love performing for the community. A lot of people that I'm talking to, especially musical theatre students, really love the Spotify playlist. And I've also been talking to parents who don't have opportunities here in Gawler for musical theatre. So it's really great that they can listen to our podcast and educate themselves at the same time and introduce themselves to musical theatre.
That is marvellous. Thank you, Michael, for promoting musical theatre as an art form and our podcast. So, dear friends, always remember that copyright law exists for a reason. And sometimes you might think, oh, well, Andrew Lloyd Webber doesn't need another 55 cents from me not paying to listen to his song. But there are lots of unsung musical theatre composers and writers, or someone who's written one little pop song from the 70s that has made its way onto the Priscilla score, who is now actually making money.
Yes, they've put in the work, they've put in the time and the hours, they deserve to be paid respectfully.
Absolutely.
Stay tuned to hear from our special guest, who has a special personal connection with today's show.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, is based on the 1994 film by Stephen Elliott, with the stage adaptation featuring a book by Elliott and Alan Scott. The original was directed by Simon Phillips, and he directed it right from the workshop stages, so he was really instrumental in turning it into the show we know today. Choreographed by Ross Coleman, who's amazing, and he and Simon are credited with developing it for the stage, because there's a lot of translating of a film to a stage version, particularly one that's got to translate the vast open space of the Australian desert and have a bus that moves.
I don't think people know how huge Australia is. It's big.
Do you know, it even surprises us Australians. Dear listener, we could drive for 10 hours from Gawler and still remain in the state of South Australia. So it's a very big country. The 2006 original Australian cast starred Tony Sheldon, the amazing, marvellous Tony Sheldon, as Bernadette Bassinger. Bernadette is a trans lady, not a drag queen, and as part of the storyline is convinced to participate in the drag act by Tick, whose drag name is Mitzi Matosis, which is very funny to Australians. And please do a Google on Mixomatosis, is what that's a play on words of. And that was played by Jeremy Stanford. And Daniel Scott played Adam, the younger participant in the trio. And Adam's stage name is Felicia Jolly Goodfellow. Love it. Now, they're all jokes way from the original. The other main characters were Bob, played by Michael Caton, who is a beloved Australian actor.
I love Michael Caton.
Misunderstanding. who was played by Nick Hardcastle, and Marion, who is very instrumental to the plot, and Michael will tell you who Marion is. And Marion was originally played by Genevieve Lemon, a very esteemed Australian actor.
Hello, lovely listeners. We now have a YouTube channel. It's Another Opening, Another Show. Now, opening is spelled O-P-E-N-I-N apostrophe, as per the lyrics that we are quoting. Another Opening, Another Show. So put that into YouTube and you will find the podcasts there. So you don't have to have a Spotify or Castbox subscription in order to hear our show.
I'm going to go and check it out now.
Good on you.
A short history of Priscilla, the musical. In the mid-2000s, it was decided that Stephen Elliott's beloved 1994 Australian film, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, would be turned into a stage show. The musical's producers and creators faced twists and turns at every step of the way, mirroring the journey of Priscilla's main characters. Priscilla was the first of three offbeat, quintessentially Australian movies of the 1990s, the others being Strictly Ballroom and Muriel's Wedding, to be adapted to the stage. Our journey begins when producing and life partners Liz Coops and Gary McQuinn were invited to dinner at the invitation of film producer Michael Hamlin and screenwriter Alan Scott. Seemingly out of the blue, Hamlin asked, "Do you think Priscilla would make a good musical?" Alan Scott was keen to adapt the film's script with its writer and director Stephen Elliott and managed to acquire the rights from MGM in the United States. That was only the beginning of the quest to get the theatrical rights to Priscilla. As complexing licensing negotiations continued, Stephen Elliott declared that the musical of Priscilla is not going to happen. Stephen Elliott had received numerous requests from film producers for movie sequels due to the original film's runaway success. "But 10 years down the line, I couldn't believe it when the stage show came along," said Elliott. "I didn't see that one coming. I just thought, well, the film costs $1 million, and the more money you spend on it, the more sanitised it becomes. The biggest fear I had in bringing Priscilla to the stage was in creating the scale and wonder of the landscape. I remember saying to the producers, how the blank do you pull a vast desert and a bus out of that hat?
How do you?"
Elliott almost brought the 2-year development of the musical to a crashing halt. McQuinn, one of the production duo, reported that Stephen Elliott said, "Priscilla has a unique message and style. It's not a musical and I don't want the story Disneyfied." It took at least a year to get through all of his objections, said Mr. McQuinn. The industry heavyweights John Frost and Michael Chugg became key investors. By opening night, the budget had increased to $6.5 million, making it one of the most expensive musicals produced in Australia. Money went into experimental technology, a bus on stage, for example, and half the budget went on costumes.
Now, listeners, Frost and Chugg are legendary in the Australian music world.
Yes, so if you are at least my age or older, you will remember the Gordon Frost Organisation being the main producer behind every travelling major musical in Australia for a period. That is who brought us that King and I with Hayley Mills that launched at the Adelaide Festival Centre and then went on to become a Tony-winning production on Broadway. He is always the producer of the professional Annie, and many, many shows. He since closed Gordon Frost and became part of Crossroads Live, whose big name would be on the banners now for big shows that we see. And Michael Chugg was basically the competition or the alternative.
Yes, he was the Australian rock scene. He was the Australian pop scene and everything else like that.
Yes, yeah.
He is a legend.
So together, they've got great theatrical expertise and great rock and pop expertise, knowledge and contacts, and money that could turn this into the show it became. By the time the cast, led by Tony Sheldon as Bernadette, began rehearsals in Sydney, the show had undergone workshops with its director Simon Phillips, who was making his first foray into commercial theatre after decades with the state theatre and opera companies around Australia. He was the artistic director of the State Theatre Company of South Australia during most of my youth, and I've seen many straight plays and musicals directed by him. And I think he was also most recently, notably, the director of Love Never Dies.
The sequel to Phantom of the Opera.
Indeed. Simon was surrounded by some of the best co-creators in the business. Costume designers Tim Chappell and Lizzie Gardner, who won Oscars for their work in the film, and legendary set designer Brian Thompson, much awarded choreographer Ross Coleman, and internationally renowned lighting designer Nick Schlieper. A complex maze of copyright and royalty issues was navigated, while an eclectic array of pop tunes was woven into the mix by musical director and supervisor Stephen Spud Murphy. Tim Chappell and Lizzie Gardner let their imaginations run wild. Chappell recalled, "Working on the stage show the first time was pressured, fun, and so ambitious. A week before opening, tension prevailed in the producing ranks, while the close-knit cast couldn't wait to get in front of an audience." Making a bus, the star of the show added many degrees of difficulty. She arrived late and behaved badly during all the previews, most notably the epic night of the AIDS charity fundraiser. The designer Brian Thompson, whose illustrious career includes Jesus Christ Superstar and the Rocky Horror Show, original versions in Australia, was reported to say, "The bus had a personality of its own. There were so many problems to drive us crazy and we flew by the skin of our teeth."
Well, it's the thing with any automobile, isn't it, that we as humans form a relationship with these.
Oh, you talk about the personification of her as a she and that she's acts like a diva.
Well, look, if she goes well and she gets you from A to B.
Well, this Priscilla didn't go very well. She would suddenly, in the middle of a song, the engines would rev. People were scampering all over the stage thinking they were about to get run over. It caused that charity night to go for 4 hours. At Priscilla's red carpet opening in October 2006, the crowd was effervescent. Finally, a new Australian musical had arrived. McQuinn recalled, "Miraculously, the show went without a hitch. The first time the bus had actually worked."
Hooray!
After playing for 11 months, Priscilla was asked to vacate the Sydney Lyric Theatre at Star City, despite having an open-ended contract. Having never expected Priscilla to run for so long, the casino's management had double-booked the venue with Cameron McIntosh's Miss Saigon. Priscilla opened on the West End in March 2009, earning high praise for its elaborate costumes and for Tony Sheldon's touching portrayal of Bernadette, the role made famous by Terence Stamp in the film. The show ran for 2 years and 7 months, a feat that owed much to McQuinn and Koops's chutzpah and unshakable belief in the work. Sadly, the show's triumph hid personal sadness. By opening night, Koops and McQuinn's marriage had ended.
Oh no.
During an early preview performance of Priscilla on Broadway in 2011, Bette Midler, one of the show's lead producers, was sitting in the balcony wondering why no one was laughing. Tony Sheldon, who would earn a Tony Award nomination for this performance, had said that Miss Midler was asked to come closer to the action. Suddenly, she was at a different show because she could hear the chuckles and laughs and appreciate the joy it was eliciting, he said. Priscilla's vulgar humour came under fire in America, the very compromise Elliot had feared. Remember, he said, "I don't want it sanitised."
Exactly. He didn't want it Disney-fied either.
That's right. Simon Phillips said that standing up for the show's integrity and Australian identity prompted fiery debate.
It's also culture as well.
Now, although it's surprising to a lot of Australians whenever we talk about the puritanical nature of American audiences or what producers think American audiences can handle, because we see some of the most vulgar and coarse, quotes, comedy come out of America, and yet if you mention things that have slightly anything to do with bodily function, they cannot cope and they want to shut you down. Now, as Michael was saying, this is a cultural problem, not just about their puritanical nature. They also didn't get certain references. Originally, the references were to Kylie Minogue and they were changed to Madonna. And there were also jokes that were considered too crude or just culturally confusing. It was an uphill battle for Simon Phillips and the team to uphold the integrity of the work. But still, Priscilla ran on Broadway for a respectable 16 months.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Tony Sheldon reprised his star turn as Bernadette alongside David Harris and Ewan Dodge in the next Australian tour, 10 years after the first Australian production.
Why so long between drinks?
Because they were in the West End and in Broadway. So if you want Tony, he can't be everywhere at the same time.
I want Tony. Okay. Why can't I have Tony?
Tony said Priscilla changed his life. Liz and Gary fought for me in London and on Broadway. They stayed loyal and I owe it to them. The audience screaming starts at the overture when the light hits the mirror ball and the reaction is the same all over the world.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, is a high-energy camp comedy drama that deals with the serious themes regarding the LGBTQIA+ experience, homophobia and transphobia. There is frequent strong language, scenes depicting physical assault, drug and alcohol use, discussions of HIV/AIDS, infidelity and complex family dynamics. Please note, dear listener, while the show features these intense moments, it is widely considered a celebratory and ultimately heartwarming show. The 1994 film, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which was written and directed by Stephen Elliott, also won an Oscar for Best Costume Design for Lizzie Gardner and Tim Chappell. Essentially, the story is about three mates on an old bus discovering more than just the outback. First, we meet Tick, a drag queen who performs under the name of Mitzi around various dingy Sydney pubs. Tick received a letter in the mail from his estranged wife, Marion, inviting him to be part of a drag show to Alice Springs in a resort where she manages. Tick decides to form a trio for these performances, asking his young flamboyant mate, Adam, who performs under the name Felicia, and Bernadette, a rather reserved transgender woman who has recently lost her husband. Now that they've agreed to the trip, how will Tick get them to the Red Centre? Enter Priscilla, a big-ass hot pink bus.
Could you please explain to the non-Australian listener, and there's quite a few of them, what do we mean by a red centre?
The outback. The red centre, the dirt, the red
dirt.
Oh,
because the dirt is actually red.
That's right.
Yes.
Exactly.
So it's Alice Springs, Uluru, all of that area.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, exactly. Over the course of their trip from Sydney to Alice Springs, the trio encounter the harsh reality of 1990s Australian views on gay people, gender roles and ethnic stereotypes. Adam's envelope-pushing behaviour leads to danger in the bush. Mm. Meanwhile, Bernadette is elegance personified, a throwback to a different age. Bernadette is a former star of Les Girls, a legendary cabaret show in King's Cross. The site of Les Girls is now the Empire Hotel.
So if you're ever in Sydney, you can pop down to Darlinghurst to the Empire Hotel.
Exactly, and have a cold
raise
beer.
Raise a glass.
Exactly.
The girls.
On their travels, Priscilla breaks down, and the trio is greeted warmly by Bob the Mechanic, a man whose heart is as big as a pumpkin. He and Bernadette take a shine to each other.
Oh.
Yes. Another pivotal relationship for Bernadette is the one between her and Adam. Initially, Adam dismisses Bernadette as a relic, but he comes to understand that he can only express himself as he wishes because he stands on the shoulders of previous generations of LGBTQIA+ people.
Indeed.
Tick has only revealed to the others that he needs to do his wife a favour, but doesn't exactly say what it is. In fact, Tick is going to Alice Springs to get to know his son, Benji.
That's a bit of a surprise.
Benji is accepting of Tick's sexuality and drag career.
Oh, jolly good.
Very mature. All three of them come out of this experience with a better understanding of themselves and their families, real or chosen. Love is the most important thing.
Oh, beautiful.
Priscilla is a feel-good party musical that blends iconic songs and dance numbers with some challenging concepts which is sure to have the audience on their feet, dancing all the way home.
Ha! Ah, and that would explain why it is such a crowd pleaser, even to this day or the most recent tour. People just love it. They are so excited when you say Priscilla's coming.
Yes, and if you have these musicals that get people up off their seat and dancing, they're the best kind of musicals, isn't it?
Well, it does make you think, because they're still dancing for the curtain call, so it makes you feel like they're having a standing ovation.
It's an in-house party. It really is.
Yes. And it's the kind of musical that attracts people who are determined to have a good time.
Yes.
And it's a pleasure as a performer to have audience who are there ready to celebrate with you.
Even front of house staff, they get involved.
Absolutely. Actually, I do occasionally volunteer for front of house, and I must say I enjoy it more when it is one of these more engaging performances, and the encore at the end involves often somebody with a feather boa putting it around an usher's neck.
Now, don't forget, dear listener, we have trivia.
Trivia.
Trivia coming up. Ooh. So keep listening.
You're listening to Another Opening, Another Show, a musical theatre podcast. Michael has been doing some interesting research into Priscilla, the actual bus from the original film. What have you discovered in your research?
Now, Priscilla is the 1976 Hino RC325 bus that's currently being restored by Rogan's Coachworks in Brisbane before the long trip to the permanent home at the National Motor Museum in the town of Birdwood in the Adelaide Hills of South Australia.
Oh, exciting.
Now, dear listener, that's just down the road from where we are in Gawler. It's absolutely wonderful. The drive from Gawler to Birdwood is fantastic.
Mm. And particularly if you do it in the autumn, lovely.
And it's also just down the road from where we record Another Opening, Another Show.
The Musical Theatre Podcast.
Exactly. I reached out to the wonderful staff at the History Trust of South Australia to see how Priscilla is going after all these years and how she's holding up for her age. And I got a reply email from Sophie Tooth, Manager of Marketing and Communications at the History Trust of South Australia, with an update to fans and lovers of Priscilla.
Oh, do tell. I assume she gave permission for this to go on air?
Yes, she did.
Oh, great.
Yes, she did. Hi, Michael. Thank you for expressing interest in sharing the restoration of Priscilla on your podcast, Another Opening, Another Show. We are taking donations towards the restoration of Priscilla on our website, www.history.sa.gov.au/Priscilla/.
Can you say that one again a little more slowly? Because some people might want to grab their pens and write this down or put it into their phones to look it up.
www.history.sa.gov.au/Priscilla/. Sophie has said on her email that Priscilla needs more than a Kris Jenner facelift.
I like Sophie.
So she talks about the condition of Priscilla. After extensive discovery work and preliminary restoration work, the extent of damage to Priscilla is far greater than initially understood. The bus is in a fragile state following discovery works, which necessitated stripping the bus bare and undertaking load testing on the structure and chassis. The entire body of the bus has significant rust affecting the structural integrity of the bus. Action. The History Trust is taking action to conserve the elements we can at this time. We've managed to start the engine and the air conditioning unit. That's really important, to start the engine and to keep the engine over. All carpets and furnishings being conserved by ArtLab due to widespread black mould.
Oh, no.
The driver's seat has been removed for conservation and treatment. And the History Trust of South Australia is working closely with the University of Queensland on a study and documentation of the bus.
Hmm.
Donations to restore Priscilla and bring her back to fabulous, very welcome. So I asked, how much do you need? And she said in an email, well, we need over $1 million for the restoration and around the same again for the exhibition at the National Motor Museum once she is restored.
Oh, right.
So basically they would need about over to, let's say, $2.5 million to make sure this happens.
What does that mean if we all chipped in, every Australian chipped in?
The population of Australia is around about 27.4 million.
Mm-hmm.
I did the sums.
Good for you.
The 27.4 million of us
contributed
10 cents.
That 10 would cents? Give
10 cents. You can find it on the ground. That would give us a grand total of $2,740,000.
Well, even if the 0.7 million Australians who don't care, even if they don't contribute.
I urge everyone out there, organisations, community groups, even big business, to put your hand in your pocket, to donate to the History Trust of South Australia for this wonderful Australian icon.
Don't forget to stick around while our special guest reveals the next show behind the door.
And now it's time for my favourite segment in the whole entire podcast.
Trivia.
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 Now, Jane.
Yes?
The iconic gold credit card dress that Lizzie Gardiner wore to the Academy Awards.
Oh, yes. I love it. It's so iconic.
It was made of American Express credit cards. Gold American Express credit cards.
They were real ones?
Yes. Real expired credit cards.
Oh, well, that is, how did she come across them? I never even thought to find out. But what I did know is that she made it for the movie, and American Express would not give permission for it to be on screen. So she thought, well, I made this wonderful dress. I'm going to wear it as a private citizen to an awards show. And so the whole world saw it anyway.
Copyright. I reckon copyright. But anyway, the dress itself was made up of 254 gold American Express expired credit cards.
That is so clever.
Now, in the film, Bill Hunter, who was Bob the mechanic in Priscilla, the movie, at the same time he was filming Muriel's Wedding.
Of course.
As Bill Hessop. He was constantly changing hair and beard and travelling the length of the country to film in different parts of the country at the same time with the two movies.
Oh, poor man.
The iconic thong dress.
Oh, yes.
Worn by Chick in the film.
Yep.
Was created for just $7, utilising the costume designer's mother's Target employee discount.
Awesome. Now, for the international listener, this is a dress made of rubber flip-flops.
Not of underwear.
Yes, a thong does not describe the smallest kind of undie.
Exactly. But I love a good discount. I love a good bargain.
Yes.
The musical Priscilla, Queen of the Desert is renowned for its extravagant Tony Award-winning costume design. Typically featured up to 500 costumes and over 200 headdresses and hats per production.
Good grief.
The Broadway production alone featured roughly 295 ostrich feathers. How many ostriches died for that? The show boasts around 260 costume changes, 60 wigs and 150 pairs of shoes. During the show's Broadway run, 24 pairs of eyelashes, 175 tubes of lipstick, 75 pots of eyeshadow, and almost 1 kilogram of glitter were used per month.
Good grief.
Now, I love glitter. Don't get me wrong. My kids love to see me in glitter, but a kilogram of it?
Well, you see, as the parent of formerly small children, I do not like glitter. Our elder child rubbed glitter on her smaller son's head in March of the year that he was 2, and it finally came off his head in October.
Oh my goodness, I remember that. Now, Priscilla the film was based upon the lives of three real drag queens, Cindy Pastel, Lady Bump and Strykemeyer. These three real drag queens were going to be playing themselves as the main characters of the movie, but were replaced later with bankable actors in a statement by studio management.
Oh, what?
Let me say this. In a book from Gawler Library called Drag Queens Down Under, curated by Art Simone, it says the following about Cindy Pastel. Without Cindy, and I quote, without Cindy, there would be no Priscilla, and without Priscilla, Australian drag wouldn't have the platform it does today.
Oh, too true.
Very true. So I want to acknowledge and pay my respect to Cindy, Lady Bump and Strykemeyer.
Yes.
Director Stephen Elliott found inspiration for Priscilla after seeing a plume of feathers break from a drag queen's headdress during Sydney's Mardi Gras parade. The headdress rolled down a deserted street like a tumbleweed in a Sergio Leone spaghetti western.
Oh, I can see it.
Yes.
So sad. Don't breach copyright.
No, we can't breach copyright.
That's some fantastic information there.
And that ends trivia.
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 You're listening to another opening another show, a musical theatre podcast.
Our guest today is Tony-nominated theatre legend Tony Sheldon, the original Bernadette in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical. Tony is a third generation of masters of the Australian stage. His mother was the late, great Tony Lamond AM, member of the Order of Australia, Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Tony's father was Frank Sheldon, who performed with his wife in a musical comedy double act. Tony's grandmother was the much lauded Stella Lamond. And by the way, Jane, singer Helen Reddy is Tony's aunt.
Indeed.
Well, here he is, listeners, Mr. Tony Sheldon.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you very much for inviting me on your program.
Oh, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it a lot. What gives you the special skills to be our guest today, talking about Priscilla?
Well, I believe you're doing Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yes.
And that is a show that I was associated with from the very, very first reading workshop, and then through all of the incarnations in Australia. Then I went on to New Zealand, did the return season in Australia, then went on and played the West End season for a year, then went on to open the show in Toronto, then Broadway for 18 months, never missed a performance, then back to Australia for the 10th anniversary production, and then at the end of 2006 performances, I hung up the high heels.
Wow, you must really hate that show.
It was completely life-changing. It was one of those things that came completely out of the blue. I was doing the producers at the time,
yeah.
And Grant Pirro, who was working with me, said, oh, they're doing a workshop of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical. He said, you could play the title role. I said, the title role is a bus, you idiot. I said, but, and it wasn't anything that really appealed to me because I hadn't liked the film. I didn't like the film much at all.
Oh, I'm
it
glad
came
we're
out
of
at
the same
exactly
mind,
the same
then.
Time as Muriel's Wedding, and I was obsessed with Muriel's Wedding, but I thought Priscilla was very vulgar, and it certainly didn't portray the drag queens that I had grown up around, and so I was a bit mystified by it all. But I did want to work with Simon Phillips, and I thought, oh, this might get me into the Melbourne Theatre Company, because he was the head of the MTC at the time. So luckily I was offered to come in and do the workshop, the 10-day workshop. And it was a very different animal at that time. It wasn't based on the film script. It was a completely different script. And it was about a guy trying to make a musical of the film of Priscilla. And the producers said, oh, you have to get permission from the three original people it was based on, because it was based on real people. So I was playing Carlotta,
who
apparently the Terrence Stamp character was based on. It was a very strange script, and it didn't work at all. And we worked on it for about a day. And finally, Simon literally threw the pages in the air and said, I'm going to have a look at the film and see if there's anything we can do with that. And he literally sat in front of the television and transcribed it from the film. And he came in and we sat down with a whiteboard and we chose songs. We had to make the decision as to whether we were going to commission an original score or whether we were going to use some of the music from the film. And we decided that the show would have a longer life if it was a jukebox musical, because if it was an Australian written score, we could probably close in 3 weeks and it would never be heard of again. And it was a tough decision, because we all really support the Australian musical theatre industry, but we were thinking in terms of getting it out there, you know. So we all had a hand in picking the songs. And I used to take the script home every night and rewrite it, because Simon had no time to sort of adapt the script for the musical stage. We were just literally doing the film script. And Stephen Elliott, the original writer-director, didn't really want a musical made of his film, so he wasn't putting anything into it. So I'd go home every night and completely rejig the script to make it a theatre piece. So my DNA is very much in the show. And as we went on, I suddenly thought, this really has legs, because it's a road movie, and which has that thing of it brings a new set of characters in every scene.
Yeah.
As the story goes on, you're constantly meeting new people, which is a wonderfully energizing thing for a musical. The parallel for me personally was, do you know the story The Faraway Tree, the Enid Blyton kid stories?
Yes, we did read it to our children only 10 years ago.
A new land appears at the top of the tree every few months, and the kids climb up and they never know who they're going to meet. Mm. And I thought the Priscilla story is The Faraway Tree. So I fell in love with it. Happily, they fell in love with me and stuck with me through all those incarnations against a lot of pressure from producers around the world who wanted to bring in Ian McKellen and Michael Crawford and, you know, people of that ilk. Mm. And our producers said, no, we want Tony. And I was the first Australian to go to Broadway with the show that he'd created the role in Australia. I mean, you know, Todd McKenney didn't get to go over with Boy from Oz.
Mm.
Usually they would replace the Australians with another person. Mm. So I made history. I made Broadway history. I was very, very thrilled.
Oh.
And Priscilla is very much a cultural thing with our Australian identity, isn't it?
It certainly is. Apart from anything else, it was the first film of its type to have two drag queens and a transsexual. But I mean, it was very much that whole scene in the 90s of Australia, that sort of rough as bags.
Exactly.
Thing, you know, and then to put them in the hostile environment of the outback where they could have died if the bus had broken down, you know, or been murdered by those homophobic people in, you know, who thought, what on earth are these people who've suddenly arrived on our doorstep? So it encapsulated not only the colour and the magic of Australia, but the danger and that sort of wake in fright quality. It was completely unique, and that's what makes it a completely unique musical.
Mm. I was going to ask some of our general questions that we ask everybody, like, is this your favourite show? Now, it's obviously beloved as a performer, but in the whole oeuvre of musical theatre, where does it stand in your top 10 love affair list?
Look, it's a jukebox musical, so I don't really count it as one of my favourite musicals at all.
So like-minded.
I value it for what it did for my career and for the joy that it brings people.
Mm.
You know, I'm a musical theatre. I've grown up in musical theatre.
Yeah.
And I have 100 shows that I would rank ahead of Priscilla as my favourite shows. But, you know, as Peter Iyer said last week, it's impossible for me to pick a favourite show. I can't even pick my favourite Sondheim. How do you compare Light in the Piazza with Damn Yankees or West Side Story with Sweet Charity or 1776 or, you know, everything? It's just impossible. It's just impossible. I have so many shows and they all change. You know, maybe Happy Ending is my current favourite show. But when I was 15, Godspell was my favourite show. So, you know, it all changes as your life experience changes.
Yes. I have people I hold in great regard whose favourite show is something that I really would only go to if my best friend had the lead and gave me comps. I can't fathom their attraction to this certain work, but it touches them, and that's what the beauty of theatrical art is that it touches people differently. And there are people who will only go to Priscilla and Mamma Mia and Grease, and I would much rather something a little bit more cerebral, and certainly original music.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I agree with you. I mean, there are some shows that I love for the story. Like, you know, Gypsy is an incredible piece of writing.
Yeah.
But there are some musicals like Street Scene, the Kurt Vile show, that I will just go and lose myself in the music. There are some shows that I really want to be moved, like Light in the Piazza, where I will just sit and sob for 2 hours, you know. Yes, I know there are people who will only go because they want to clap along and have a dance in the aisle.
That's very energising as a performer too.
And they make a fortune.
Yes. And even being front of house staff, and front of house staff want to get in and dance as well. So it's a wonderful thing.
Of course.
Yes, rather than handing out tissues at the end. we've been in community theatre for the most part, and I was born into it. And my grandmother was in Rockdale and Sydney GNS for 40 years as the contralto. And so we've been in lots of facets. So that's why Michael's referring to front of house. He's managed the bar.
But the fact that you referred to Godspell, Tony, I was given the role of Jesus Christ with only 4 weeks to go in the show.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Loved playing it.
I loved it. Yeah. 2 weeks of choreography, 2 weeks of learning the lines, and I just wrote everything that I had to remember on a school whiteboard and just did it.
I did 5 auditions for Godspell for the original Sydney production.
Oh, really?
But I was only 15. And Betty Pounder was directing it, and I got right through to the finals, and she wrote me a letter, and she said, look, everybody else looks like your mum and dad on the stage. She said, like a schoolboy. But she said, don't worry, your time will come.
Yes.
And I was inconsolable at the time,
but
she was absolutely right.
Yes, your time came at 50. That was interesting.
Hey, better late than never, you know.
Well, only the extra...
Exactly, you know. But, I mean, all the other shows... I mean, I had a huge career before Priscilla came along.
Oh, yes.
Playing, you know, but I was in straight theatre.
Mm.
And I was doing the classics, and I was doing Long Day's Journey Into Night and Chekhov and
yeah, so theatre like nerds like me have always known you.
And I did all the Sondheims at the Sydney Theatre Company. You know, yep. I did Into the Woods and Company and Merrily We Roll Along. And so it's not as though I was sitting around waiting for a break, sort of winding down by the time the producers rocked around. But it was just that the producers suddenly... Well, Torch Song Trilogy and the producers suddenly put me into a different thing where when they were thinking of who's going to play a transsexual convincingly, they thought of me because I've been frocking up for a couple of gigs, you know. And that was the thing. Especially with nowadays, if they were creating Priscilla, I think they would go with a gender-fluid performer, and rightly
sure,
so.
Yeah.
Hmm.
At the time, it was about who can pull this off convincingly without it looking like a panto dame, who's not going to make you think all the time that is a man in a dress, and who's going to be able to play 8 shows a week of intensive singing and dancing, a lot of, you know, very dramatic demands, and be funny. So it was a huge brief. It wasn't an easy role to cast. And indeed, the last production, I had a terrible injury after the Sydney season, and I was told not to do the Adelaide section of the tour because I had a fractured sacrum, and I couldn't walk. I was requested by the management to go and open the show in Adelaide because they couldn't replace me. There was nobody around, and they didn't want to open with my lovely understudy, David Spencer. So I had to go and do the show very badly injured, and it was unfortunate because Peter Gers chose to take me to task for not doing 8 shows a week, and he made a whole fuss about the fact that I was unprofessional, and it was a terrible betrayal because I could not walk.
Yes,
and
I have
Peter
read
had
that.
Always been very supportive
article.
Of me up to that point, you know, and it was part of the reason I left the industry because I just thought, oh, well, if this is the way people are going to treat me at this point in my life, I'm just going to quit. So I did. It's a very demanding role, but I'm pleased to see now some trans and gender fluid people are getting a crack at playing it around the world, which is
great. Yes, yeah. It's a long time ago. It's 20 years ago when we didn't have as many people who were able to audition for parts with that demand who also had lived experience of the transgender life. So it would have been incredibly difficult to cast someone who could meet all those requirements. And as you say, now we've got a new generation.
Yes, yes, exactly. You know, I mean, at the time, there really only was, like, you know, Carlotta was the only person who would have been a name who would have been possible. But as Simon said, she wouldn't have been able to do that show 8 times a week because she had no experience of that. Mm. She wouldn't have had the stamina or the training. But it's a different world now.
Mm, quite. Now, Michael's trying to bring my attention back to our actual list of questions. But, well, you know, it's only a guide.
Exactly, and we're having a lovely chat with Tony Sheldon.
Was there a particular one you want me to actually focus on, or were you just trying to get me on track?
I was trying to get you on track, actually. Okay.
One of the questions is about the Australianness of it. Could you transplant it to any other country and tell the story the same way?
You could, but I don't see what the point of it would be, because as we've established, it's a very Australian story. You could send them out into the Californian desert or to the Sahara, I suppose. The thing with this show, when we took it to London, the producers didn't really have the courage of their convictions at the time, and a lot of concessions were made. There was a bit of panic about, oh, we have to change a lot of the references, and it lost a lot of its quality. And at one point they had the Queen walk across the desert with a corgi, which was a very funny time gag, but had nothing to do with Priscilla. I mean, why is the Queen walking across the desert with a corgi? So I used to get very annoyed about that. It was interesting. They were putting in names of, like, you know, local TV names and things like that. And I stamped my foot a lot because Simon Phillips used to call me the taste police about the show. I said, well, somebody's got to be looking after its interests. And it was interesting that after I left the show after a year, a lot of the things went back in that I had complained about.
Oh.
But 2 years down the track, when we got to America, we trusted the material more. And we said, no, we're going to stick to the Australian script. And people were fine. As I kept saying, we've got Billy Elliot coming out here with those thick accents, and it's all set in a mining town. And, you know, once your ear adjusts, you accept it and you get used to it. Billy Elliot's a huge hit around the world, and nobody's saying, oh, well, we better set it in Glenelg. Uniquely Australian story, and I think it works best. But it's a fantasy. The thing about the musical is we don't have the desert. We can't put the desert on stage.
Mm.
So they replaced it with the fantasy of the musical numbers and the silly costumes.
Yeah.
So it's sort of the Ziegfeld Follies with a bit of a storyline.
Right.
You know, that was the compromise that was made. If you can't put sand on the stage, let's put silly costumes on. So it sort of happens in a no man's land anyway. I think the Australianness of it is a flavouring.
And there's been imagistic sets for at least 100 years. We don't have to have an actual real live desert on a stage, just as much as we didn't actually have sea around the ship in Pinafore.
Absolutely true. I mean, the big challenge was the bus. And the bus grew exponentially as the show went on. I mean, the bus made some pretty colours originally when it first opened and sort of trolled around. And there was somebody actually in the bus, crouched down with a computer on his lap, driving it.
Oh, like a Christmas
pageant.
But
as it went on...
Yes. Mm.
Went on, it became completely computerized, and the scenery started to happen on the bus with sort of wonderful computerized lighting. So
wonderful.
The bus took the place of the desert, basically, as the centerpiece of the show.
All right.
Tony, I don't know if you heard about the restoration project with the actual bus with Priscilla and what it needs done and things like that. The History Trust of South Australia are working closely with the University of Queensland to restore the bus and then to bring it to the National Motor Museum at Birdwood. Do you think that would be a good home for the bus?
Oh, I think it's a wonderful idea. And yes, I saw Bonnie Britt is on the committee. Bonnie, who's a well-known Adelaide personality, who played Bernadette up on the Gold Coast, and I went up and saw her do it.
She reprised it down here a few years ago for the Gilbert and Sullivan Society.
How wonderful. That's wonderful. No, I think it's a fabulous idea.
Mm.
I think it's great. I think it's great for the region, and it's just down the road from us in Gawler where we record the podcast. So it's absolutely wonderful.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes, we'll take a trip.
And visit it.
Yes. Now, I'm going to thank you for our chat about Priscilla and your involvement with it. And I would like to now play Dreamcast with you. So we've got the leading characters, and we can choose people living or dead or aged out of the role, or maybe you could see that in 10 years they might be perfect. So I'll ask you, and then Michael and I chip in, who would you cast as Bernadette? Tony?
Well, that's a tough one, because it's having created her, she's very, very near to my heart. I based her a Sydney drag personality called Rose Jackson,
right.
Who was very big at in the clubs in the 60s and 70s. So I would always have loved Rose to do it. But when I was doing the show on Broadway, people used to tell me I reminded them of Greer Garson or Eve Arden. So I think I'd like to see Eve Arden play her.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful.
Now, I suggest Tony Sheldon, because I can't possibly fathom another person to it.
But then I had the thought of Peter O'Brien.
Because he's now moved into the Silver Fox generation. Yes.
Peter
O'Brien. Yeah. I don't know if he sings. Well, he's much more than just off Neighbours.
He's a rather well-built, masculine chappy.
He actually surprisingly slender. He turned up recently on Return to Paradise as the Silver Fox from the Bowls Club.
Right.
And I was surprised at how slender he was. But I don't know, does he sing?
No idea. I wouldn't have thought he'd be the prettiest of girls, though. Well, that remains
people,
to be seen.
People and their abilities and their God-given talents can surprise us.
Well, this is true.
Exactly.
But as we covered, we're probably, given it's these days, there's probably somebody who's gender fluid who can do this to a T that we just haven't heard of yet.
Exactly, exactly. Well, it's currently being played by Adele Anderson, who from Fascinating Aida, the English comedy trio. And Adele is transgender, and I'm delighted she's had a crack at it. I mean, she's 72 now, but I mean, I'm just thrilled that she's doing the current English tour. She only opened in it this week.
It's more than just the fact that she's transgender, because she's a brilliant musician and singer and comedian.
Exactly.
And that is really what we want.
And rather glam, you know, very glamorous lady too, you know, which is great.
Tony, who would you cast as Tick?
As Tick? I was friends with the late Gavin Creel.
Oh, right. Would he do an Aussie accent?
I think he would have been a lovely Tick. If it was an Australian, Lyndon Watts, Lyndon Watts, the he's a lovely Australian performer. But Gavin, I think I would love to have seen do it.
We thought of Matt Day.
Oh yes, lovely.
So the role of Adam, Felicia, who would you go with?
I'm suggesting Robert Irwin.
Oh
yes. Yes, I can see Robert Irwin doing that.
Very pretty.
Dancing with the Stars. He did Dancing with the Stars.
Yes.
Got that wonderful, naughty personality. There was, I got to do the show with so many terrific people, but that character's so tricky because he can be really horrible.
Yeah.
He's very cruel to Bernadette. Sometimes with some of the boys I did it with, it came across as cruel and irritating. I worked with a lovely boy on Broadway called Nick Adams, who made him like a naughty child. And there was sort of an impishness about it that was very funny and very attractive. And I think Robert Irwin would have that sort of quality.
Yeah. Now, my suggestion is Sean Marley Moore. Are you familiar with Sean?
I am familiar with Sean, yeah. Yes, yes, indeed.
Yes, that same playfulness, and also insider knowledge on my part that Sean's partner I've known for 30 years. I was the musical director of the first show that he played for, so it's a small world.
Oh my goodness!
And was that?
Well, that was the Godspell.
That was Godspell.
That Michael.
That was Godspell that we were all in.
Circles within circles.
Exactly.
What's your choice for Bob?
To play Bob with iconic Australians from Bill Hunter to John to Michael Caden to Robert Rubb, so many people. I thought it might be fun to see Bob played by either Hugo Weaving Saving or Guy Pearce.
Oh yes. That papoo's ours. We won't even say ours.
We'll say it anyway.
Okay.
Brian Wenzel and Gordon Piper.
Because, of course, we could do Living or Dead.
And then I thought, well, I'm a country boy. I'm that sort of person. What about me?
Indeed.
Exactly.
Yes, you can.
I love wearing overalls.
The other person I thought of was Hugh Jackman.
Yes.
I like all those. Mm. I really like all those. But me. Me. me.
The actor's warm-up.
Yeah, you got to do Godspell.
So, the lovely Marion, who would you choose for that?
Rose Byrne. Margot Robbie. I'll go with Margot Robbie.
All right. We went with Sarah Snook, Adelaide's own.
Ah, well, we're all thinking along the same lines.
Yes. Now, Jimmy, the Indigenous man that they encounter.
I really do hope Tony's thinking along the same lines as we are.
My current favourite Indigenous performer is Hunter Page Lashard.
Oh, yes. Mm. He's very good.
Who's doing a lot of TV. I'd go for him.
Mm. Well, we've wound the clock back again on this one to have... Do you want to say it, Dale?
Uncle Jack Charles as a young man.
Oh, lovely. That's lovely.
Because with both of them, it's about the joy coming across. Yes.
It's a beautiful thing to see.
Now, the last one we've
Absolutely.
Got...
Absolutely. I think that's lovely casting.
The last one on our list is Shirley the Barmaid.
Now, before we do this, Peter Ayers said that you've cast two people. You're not going to be a very good producer.
I wouldn't worry about that. We had guest Shirleys.
Oh,
in our
right.
Because we started with Genevieve Lemon.
Yep.
And then we had Colette Mann. And then Jackie Weaver came in as a guest Shirley for a couple of weeks. I got to do it with many, many people. But the Broadway Shirley was Keala Settle.
I'm a big fan of her. Yes.
Who played the bearded lady.
Yep.
And she introduced the song This Is Me, which was nominated for the... Keala was extraordinary. And she, her background is New Zealand, so she had a flawless Australian accent. She was very forbidding looking.
Yes.
And she had the voice of an angel. So I'd have to say Keala. She was far and away. I couldn't get anyone better than her.
Well, we've chosen two people.
Not to share the role. We couldn't make our mind up.
So Virginia Gay or Libby O'Donovan?
Oh, yes.
Are you familiar with Libby O'Donovan?
Oh,
she's
yes,
an Adelaide-based performer.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, because particularly Libby is from Broken Hill originally, and so it's got that little extra touch there.
Exactly.
And Virginia did a guest shot in Priscilla in Sydney. We did a charity night, and we had people who came in, and they sort of... We wrote parts in for people, like little cameos.
Uh-huh.
And Virginia was doing All Saints at the time. And so she came on as a nurse in the Alice Springs scene when Bernadette fainted. And suddenly Virginia ran on as a nurse and tried to revive me. So she has experience with the show.
Right.
But does she have experience as a nurse to give you that revival and that sort of thing?
I couldn't tell you. But I don't think she was in Godspell.
No.
Oh, I bet Libby was.
Yes.
Libby's also Gawler's own because she, her parents, both mother and father, were the Anglican priests here.
Oh, good heavens.
Yeah. What would they
have thought of her playing Shirley?
Now, Tony, who would you cast as Benji?
Oh, my goodness me, I hadn't given a thought to Benji.
But I thought of Gary Pankhurst, who played Sonny Hammond in Skippy.
Oh, Skippy!
Skippy! Skippy the bush kangaroo!
Hey, copyright!
One of the kids that I did it with on Broadway, Gaten Matarazzo, went on to become one of the stars of Stranger Things.
Yes. He's on our teenage daughter's
took over
often
Tobias in Sweeney Todd on Broadway, and so it's been lovely seeing him go from a little 10-year-old with gaps in his teeth to become a major TV star.
Yes.
It's been lovely.
Yes, lovely. His version of Never-Ending Story on Stranger Things is wonderful. It's...
Oh, that's why our children go around singing
He was a very endearing Benji. He was lovely.
I was vocal coach for a couple of the boys in your Adelaide stint last time it came through. Only one of them I have kept up with, but he is... where is he now? Anyway, on the commercial stage somewhere in Australia, which is great.
So he's excellent. Still going with his career.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's a really feel-good story.
I hear his turn as Benji was not the first role he had played. He was quite accomplished for a 10-year-old. Mm. So I'm not surprised that he's still going strong now that he's 18 or 20 or whatever it is now. 20. That was 10 years ago.
How wonderful. Yes. Once you're bitten by the bug at that age, it's hard. My first show was Oliver when I was 10. And a lot of those kids from, this is back in 1966, a lot of those kids are like John Deirdrick, and Danny Radijovic, who became a principal with the New York City Ballet. There were a lot of people went on to have glittering careers.
Yes, Tony Robinson is, I think, the first, or certainly in the first season of Oliver as the Dodger in London, and he hasn't stopped.
Yes. Mm. How wonderful.
Tony, what is your drag queen name? And so the first name would be the first name of the pet you've ever owned, and the surname would be the name of the first street you lived on. So I'm going to ask, Tony Sheldon, what is your drag queen name?
Noddy Riversdale.
Awesome.
Oh, I love it. Jane, tell Tony yours.
Oh, I decided for effect to not use the first street, but the street where we lived when we got the pet. So I'm appropriate for Priscilla. Sheena Brolga.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And mine was Corky Court. Corky Court.
That's a good one. I'd use that one.
Yes, yes. Patent pending, it's mine. You can't have it, Tony, it's mine.
Dear listener, Tony has just opened the door on our advent calendar of shows to reveal door number 7. And what musical have you picked, Tony?
Chicago!
Oh, fabulous! Lovely.
Wonderful!
Yes, another one of those gateway shows for a lot of people into our world. Well, that is the end of our questions, and thank you so much for participating. We're really, really chuffed that
Tony, it's been an absolute delight, and we love you. God bless you, and keep doing what you're doing. Don't ever stop, all right?
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you. It's been a joy.
What are you doing now? Are you writing? Are you doing stuff?
No, I'm out of the business. I'm retired.
I'm
a house husband.
We love you, Tony. We love you so much. Thank you for being on our podcast, another opening, another show. We'd love to have you back again.
Thank you. And I look forward to listening to future editions.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to...
Another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast.
Bye for now.